Welcome to Equipped, a podcast by Connection Church. Equipped is a conversation about multiplying gospel community and fueling spiritual growth. We have one clear goal, to equip leaders to multiply. We want to help people follow Jesus, make disciples, lead small groups, and plant churches. My name is Jordan Thigpen, and I'll be leading you through today's conversation. Let's get equipped. Been off for a couple weeks here with the podcast and taking a little bit of a break from sort of the rhythms, not really by choice. We've just had a lot going on with having James Ballor with us from the Philippines for these last several weeks. And that kind of leads us into today's conversation. I want to consider, what did we learn by having a pastor level, church planting leader level person just around in the life of our church the last several weeks? I want to just think about, what are some of the big lessons or the big things that we observed as a team, meaning me and Morgan. I'm joined today by Morgan Nowak, and she will be walking through some of these observations with me. Tell everybody, hey, Morgan.
Hey, everybody.
All right. And so we're going to look at, we did this in kind of a fun, really 30-second way before jumping on here of we did kind of going back and forth of like a draft of taking like a first-round pick, second-round pick, third-round pick of what were the big lessons that stood out to us, of things that we learned. And so we'll share those and then kind of comment on each one as we observe them, or the ones that we kind of took note of what did we learn from having James here? And I would say, here's why I think this is important. Because if you think about what we do as a church, you know, I'm talking specifically to our Connect Group leaders, talking to the folks in CLP, the Connection Leader Path, and thinking about people that really care about making disciples. If you think about what we spend a lot of our energy and time in as a church, on the outside, it can look and feel very Sunday morning related. It can feel very, is the worship team in place? Is the sermon prepared? Are the volunteers recruited? Are the volunteers trained? How many people are in the parking lot? How many people are in the seats? Is there any production problems? And we could, and this isn't just true for Connection, this is universally true for all churches, we can fall into a trap of measuring our success based off of those external metrics of how many people were here, how many volunteers do we have, how many people got saved, how many people got baptized, and all of those things that are, those are not wrong in and of themselves, but we can put too much weight into them. And so a lot of what we as a church have tried to do is make ourselves not a church centered on what we call the broken system, which is everything's dependent on the performance of the staff and all the work is done by the staff, but we want to be an equipping modeled church, which means we equip the saints to do the work of ministry. And what I have found is that if you work on the sending portion of Connect, Equip, and Send, if you spend more, if not an equal amount, if not more energy on the equipping and sending, you will see fruit at the connecting level. But if for everyone that can't see, Morgan's nodding her head in agreement. but if you spend all your time and energy focused on the connecting area, you will not intentionally raise up fully equipped saints to send them out. In other words, the sort of rough way that I would say it is that without focusing on equipping and sending, we lose out on experiencing all that the Bible has to offer about the God that we worship. Mm-hmm. We don't get to see, I say this a lot, we don't get to, I believe God reserves special experiences of His grace, and He reserves a certain type of a blessing for people that go. Mm-hmm. People like our missionary team in Tunisia, people like the missionary team from Connection Vidalia that's mm-hmm. getting ready to go to Southeast Asia. And I believe the same is true for James. Mm-hmm. James is a trained nurse. He could have, like many of his countrymen, left the Philippines and gone to California. He could have moved to anywhere else in a much more prosperous situation. So in a lot of ways, he is a portion of sending in the sense that he is thinking of himself as a means of God's grace to reach the Philippines, and he is chosen to stay on purpose. And so that's why I think this worth for us as a church that doesn't always get to experience stuff like this. And I would say this too, I feel like I'm talking a lot, but I would say this too, that there's a lot of stuff that we get to talk about in the context now of James that we realize as realities that we have to be a little bit more hush-hush about with our missionary team in North Africa, mm-hmm. right? Because the secretive, secure nature of their work, where the Philippines, it's fine. Go start a church. Go mm-hmm. plant a church. Go tell people about Jesus. That we got to experience with our team in North Africa that we don't always get to experience, that we don't always get to talk about, that our church, I guess, our body doesn't always get to experience. And so that's why we want to talk about it today, because we get to talk a little bit more openly and freely and learn some lessons from why does sending matter? Why does, and what I mean by sending is the process of raising someone up to be a leader of God's mission anywhere in the world, mm-hmm. okay? I want to say that again. When I talk about sending, I'm talking about the process of developing a person to be able to be a leader of God's mission anywhere in the world. Okay, so I'll go first, or actually, Morgan, you want to go first, and I'd love to hear what was the first lesson that you observed in having James around for this last month. What was one thing that you feel like either you learned, the guest services team learned, or what did we learn as a team, as a staff, as a church from having James around for 3 weeks?
Yeah, well, the first thing that stands out to me is just what I wrote down here is being grateful for what you wrote down for me, is being grateful for what we have.
I did not force feed you the notes,
no.
By the way. Morgan was just talking and I was writing notes for her.
Yes. So. but yeah, the first thing I think of is grateful for what we have. So the reason I say that is because from day one, when James got here, he was just so grateful and he was so thankful and he was so eager to just see everything we had to offer. And it's easy for us to forget that the things that happen on a Sunday morning or the things that happen throughout the week are God's grace. Mm. And it's easy for us to expect these things, for me leading guest services, to expect the team to show up, you know. But even on a Sunday that I thought we didn't have that many guest services people and I was struggling to make sure that everything ran smoothly, James was over there taking pictures of the team because he was amazed that we had so many people willing to serve God and serve our church on a Sunday morning. And it just made me stop and remember, like, I should be grateful for this. And I am grateful for our guest services team, but it's easy to get caught up in regular life and everything else that's going on a Sunday morning and forget that God has given me this gift, you know, to glorify him on our church, specifically on a Sunday morning with the guest services team, and not to take advantage of these people, not to look over them, because I mean, I'm incredibly grateful for them,
right.
And they need to know that. And I need to know that too, every single Sunday, to remember that they're giving their time sacrificially, you know, to serve the Lord and to serve him at our church.
That's right. Yeah. Like it's easy to lose sight of the fact that that we need like 14 people to serve and now we've only got 10 here. So, you know, whatever the numbers mm-hmm. are, like it's easy to get fixated on who's not there versus who is there. And for him to observe that like, man, you guys have how many people serving mm-hmm. and they're doing what? And those kind of things.
Similarly, he was talking about, you know, during COVID, and COVID was tough. I don't want to take that away from us. But during COVID, he was saying that we were having a hard time because we stayed at home. And in the Philippines, they were having a hard time because they didn't have food.
Right.
You know? And
oh, man.
I mean, we can't take advantage of the fact that most of us, when we go home, we have something to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, our fridges are full, our pantries are full. We probably have options even, you know, it's not, we only have one thing to eat. We have a few options of what we want to eat. And these are, you know, these are things that God has gifted us with, you know, and it's easy to lose sight of that, in our fast paced world, but it's worth it to slow down and acknowledge that too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't tell you how many times he said thank you both to me or to people that were serving him, which leads to sort of my first observation. The first lesson I learned from this last month with James, or really just what do we learn about this work of sending, is our people were so generous and hospitable.
Mm-hmm.
We had plenty of resources and supplies that, if we needed, like, it just was incredible to see, like, Jason and Julie Hooray that are relatively new in the life of our church. I'll never forget the first time I realized Julie was serving. I remember seeing them in Heart and Soul, but then I remember the first time I saw her serving, somebody was passed out on the floor, and she's just, like, buzzing around, taking care of it. And she was, and a lot of it's because what she does, right? That's her job is related to that, but just to see the intersection of, like, her spiritual gifts mixed with her professional gifts in the timing that she began to serve, having her here for that stroke that guy was experiencing was huge. And now, less than a couple months later, her and Jason are hosting James. And, like, you know, I just remember my time as an intern and being, you know, the couch surfer in the church, you know, and just the way people, like, serve. Like, when I think about it now, like, I'll never forget the family. It's Alex and Kate Chapman, that they would just give me endless access to their pantry and refrigerator. And as a college student, I'm like, oh, this is normal. You know, my parents always have the fridge stocked. My parents always have the pantry stocked. And of course I can go in here and eat all of the double stuffed Oreos or whatever. But as an adult, you realize that comes with a grocery budget. Mm-hmm. You realize that comes with, like, you know, the reality that somebody else ate the last of the thing you were looking forward to. And then you add another person, like a resident, into the mix. But to see the, like, joy that they seem to have gotten from it and the way that it blessed James, like, every person that the two families that he stayed with formed a relationship with him that he's still trying to stay in contact, and that it was a really positive interaction both for him and I think for them as well, for between Jason and Julie, and then also Guy, who Guy serves faithfully. He's in a connect group, and he drove him to and from work every day, made sure his house was stocked, made sure he had a comfortable bed, and all kind of stuff. It's just amazing how generous and hospitable. And I think it's interesting in, like, 2023, how often do people get to use what is a clear spiritual gift of hospitality?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many people and how often do people get a chance to use a gift that God gave them? So it was just cool to see, because we don't get a chance to see those often. But then so many people gave grocery gift cards and Three Tree gift cards and Visa gift cards and just cash that we as a church, and I can't stress this enough, we as a church didn't, outside of the plane ticket, didn't have to dip into our normal budget to provide for his needs.
Wow.
You know, and we got to do something that I don't want to give away sort of my last round draft pick here, but that made a huge difference, that we were able to invest in him, fully supported by our people. That I think it's something that we need to remember going into the future, of ways that we can affect the global kingdom of God, and it's our people are doing it, right? It's our people. Same way with the Heart and Soul, or the Connection Kids signups. 160 people signed up for that. That's a hand clap for them. You know, they did that. They signed up for that to be generous with their gifts and time to meet a need. And I think our people are excited to do even more, I guess, is all I'm getting at. So,
and that's one of our core values, right? Generosity.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you did Heart and Soul with me, or if you hear me doing Heart and Soul, that's what I'll always tell people when we go over generosity. I say, you know, we're not just talking about financial, but finances are a part of it, of course. But how can you be generous with all of the resources God has given you? If you have an extra bed, can you use that to open your house up to a overseas pastor? You know, yeah. If you have extra food, can you, you know, provide him a meal or something like that? And it was cool to see us living that out, not just saying it on a piece of paper, talking about it on a Sunday morning, but to see our Heart and Soul family actually caring about our core values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for people to be interested in hearing his story, mm-hmm. you know, it was cool too, on the off chance that we had like a couple of Filipino families in the mm-hmm. life of our church that were able to take him to lunch and hang out and spend time with him. I just thought that was really, really cool for Jesse and for some of her friends to be able to do that. But all right, what's your second observation or second lesson from this past month?
Yeah, so the second thing that stood out to me is that we have more in common with people around the world than we think. Mm. So, you know, James got here and I don't know if any of us really knew what to expect. You know, what is he going to want to talk about? What questions is he going to have? What is his story going to be like? What does he look like? What does he sound like? What's his English like? You know,
oh, yeah.
All those sorts of things. And then he showed up and he was a friend. He was a fellow believer in Christ. You know, right. He was a brother. And it was really cool to be around that. And no, we didn't grow up in the same place. No, our first language wasn't the same. You know, no, our values of our culture might be a little bit different, but we had so much in common at the same time. We were on the same page with who Jesus is and what he's done. You know, we were on the same page with many of those things, you know, how we should serve the body of Christ, how we should worship God and things like that. And it made it for much less, you know, awkward conversation than I thought there was going to be. Mm. A lot of times you could just find something in common and talk about it, even mm-hmm. though we didn't know each other very long and we come from different cultures, it was still very easy to treat him like a member of the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like laughter is universal, right?
That's
like
right,
you know way more about anthropology than I do, but like that seems to be the thing that is, it transcends culture, is a smile, mm-hmm. is a laugh. And I think that when we think about people from the other side of the world, we think of all the ways that we wouldn't be able to communicate with them. And I think that's what's interesting about this relationship with James, is how good his English is mm-hmm. to that bridges the like gap to be able to have mutual understanding for the partnership in the gospel.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's exciting about this, is what all God could use this relationship to do.
Yeah.
Like if you go to the cafe and you look at all of the work that that one of our staff members did to put that picture of the globe up on the wall with all the explanations of the 1040 window and all these different things of the nature of global lostness. I went and read it this morning, like in a recent study showed that Christians, not non-Christians, Christians spent more money on Halloween costumes for their pets than the amount of money that was given to the work among unreached peoples.
Yeah, gosh.
The Philippines is like an oasis in the middle of a desert of lostness, where, and it's not that there's a ton of, it's just that there's a different dynamic in the Philippines compared to Japan, China, Korea, specifically North Korea, even including South Korea, and Vietnam, and Laos, and Cambodia, and Thailand, and Indonesia, and all these places.
Yeah.
That's all a big portion of the 1040 window, but the Philippines is smack dab in the middle as a potential sending hub.
Hmm.
But the need, like the, so anyway, yeah, the thing about Halloween costumes for your dogs, that's by spending done by Christians.
Yeah. For makes their, me want to cry.
For their pets, yeah. Not for their kids. Halloween costumes for their pets. Mm-hmm. So all that to say that like one, as a church, didn't spend any additional money out of our budget that we already have, because it's all accounted for, right? The money that we have, that we've stewarded for kids ministry, for college ministry, for student ministry, for Sunday morning, for salaries, for outreach, for small groups, all these things, that's money that's all accounted for. And so because our people were generous and had him, had somebody outside of that here, and we realized how much we had in common, to your point, with him, mm-hmm. I want people to understand that we are on the verge of maybe being able to impact global lostness and the 1040 window through a very meaningful relationship.
Yeah.
And so I think that which leads in sort of, anything else you want to say on that?
No.
Okay.
That covers it.
The next point, the next lesson that that I wrote down, that's really something I watched James observe constantly while he was here, is that Jesus saves around the world. Mm-hmm. That Jesus is the same, that the amount of distance from Jerusalem to Manila is the same distance from Jerusalem to Atlanta. And like the same gospel had to make its way from the empty tomb in the Middle East to yours and my doorstep here in the States. Mm-hmm. And it had to be carried on the back of people who saw and understood that Jesus was the Messiah, that he was God's answer to what are we going to do about sin, and that there is no means under heaven, there's no other name under heaven given that man might be saved than through Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that is true in the United States, and that's true in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. And James is a representation of that, that we get to stand on, you know, a 12-hour difference of a time window and see, like, Jesus saves around the world. Mm-hmm. And I just watched as James sat in Jason Loy's Connect group, and there's a lot of guys in their Connect group that are just a bunch of good old boys, you know, that's how I would refer to them, that like to fish and hunt and all that kind of stuff. And they, you know, even Jace commented, like, man, it really is like it's an easy thing to lose sight of, that it's the same Jesus, you know, mm-hmm. it's the same Jesus, it's the same message. And it's, yeah, like you can say the same combinations of an explanation of the gospel in the States in English as you can in the Philippines in Tagalog, and mm-hmm. it sounds like hope. You know, and that's really cool. So Jesus saves around the world.
Yeah. That's what Revelation says, right? In my own little paraphrase, is that we'll see people of all colors and all shapes and sizes and all languages and everything else, you know, worshiping Christ.
That's
so
right.
It was cool to have someone who was not like us here worshiping Christ with us.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So are you on your last one?
Yeah, my last one. I said that there's always something more to learn. And James was very clear about that while he was here. You know, he was always asking questions, and he was always learning, and he was always trying to understand how we did things and why we did things the way that we did. And that goes vice versa, too. I mean, we had so much to learn from him. And I think it's easy to believe that someone who is planting multiple churches, someone who pastors a church, someone who he's already married, you know, he's set, he's got it. But that's not true necessarily. He still has so much to learn. Mm-hmm. And that's what he was open about while he was here, you know, is wanting to learn and wanting to grow. And we all have that opportunity. And I would just want us to be careful about, I want myself to be careful about, there's no point at which we've made it in the Christian faith. There will always be more to learn. There will always be more perspectives of Christ to see that maybe we haven't thought about before. You know, there will always be more relational, you know, things to understand with people you haven't maybe met before and things like that. And so that's something that James taught me while he was here, is don't get caught in the trap of, you know, I've made it, I figured it out now, because that's not actually ever going to happen.
That's right. Yeah, that is so true. That, I mean, and it's powerful, because that's how we met. Probably something that maybe 1% of our church saw, which were these old CEA videos that we made during COVID. Me and Brandon and Justin Page just sat around and made some videos about equipping. You know, we came out of this long series about the design of God's church to move away from the broken system, or this need, this clear call. And, you know, there's lots to say about that. That was really good. That then we get into this time of COVID and everything shut down. Mm-hmm. And we made these videos to continuing to try to equip our people and encourage our people. And just in the process of searching for resources to continue to learn, because James was pastoring the church that he is still pastoring for less than a year, or maybe mm-hmm. a little over a year, and then it's all shut down.
Yeah.
And now he's just kind of, you know, like really struggling, mm-hmm. really struggling. And he's just looking for people to encourage him, to spend time with him, to pour into him. And he reached out to several churches in the States. But that hunger to continue to learn is what got him into my email inbox and then over Zoom and then now to the States mm-hmm. to where now we're on the verge of being able to partner in such a way that we can make a difference in the 1040 window via Zoom, email, Instagram messages, and one trip to the States so far.
Yeah.
But it started with a hunger to learn.
All right.
Which is a huge point that you're making.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that if we lose sight of that, then we will lose the opportunity to make that difference. Mm-hmm. You know, not with James, just in general. If we decide, I'm done learning now, we've really closed ourselves off to letting God use us that much more.
How do you think that looks for us in the States? What could we learn, and what should we do differently in light of that sort of observation that you're making, like apply it to our church?
Yeah, I mean, obviously humility is a huge part of it. Mm. You know, never really, just being careful to judge someone else because maybe your circumstance is better than theirs, or it seems to you better than theirs at least. But also just being open to joining, you know, growth challenges and connect groups and close the gaps and things that you might think, hey, I know plenty about this. Let's say there's a growth challenge coming up on marriage. Maybe you say, my marriage is fine. Well, why don't you come join us anyways? Because who knows what you could learn there, you know? Or maybe there's a sermon series on grace and you're like, I've got grace. I figured it out, you know, still come to church. Who knows what you're going
right.
to, who knows what you're going to learn from a series on grace, you know? Don't be closed off just because you think you figured it out, because you think you're done learning about it. You know, put yourselves in situations where you could continue to learn and hear other people's opinions and perspectives of these different topics.
You know, what we think we know is tested when we put it to actual work.
Mm-hmm.
So I would challenge, if you feel like you've really got a strength, put it into building influence with another person's life and we'll find out. Psalm 37, 1 and 2 says this, "Do not be agitated by evildoers. Do not envy those who do wrong, for they wither quickly like grass and wilt like tender green plants." That idea of like the sometimes our what we feel like or perceive as a blessing or a strength will fade and wilt like tender green plants.
Mm.
Like it can be easily scorched like grass, where when there's a drought, you don't really see an oak tree suffering because mm-hmm. it's got deep roots, right? Or,
yeah.
You know, that's the thing about sometimes with our strengths is that when we don't stay in that posture of humility, it can become a source of pride. That's mm-hmm. the inversion, right? If we're not cultivating, and then obviously this goes on in verse 4, take delight in the Lord and he will give you your heart's desires. That the point there is not our heart's desires. The point is taking delight in mm-hmm. the Lord. And what I would challenge people with is if you feel like you have a strength, put it to the test by beginning to disciple and influence. Yeah. And if you've got a strong marriage, there are weak marriages out there that need your strength for you to invest in. If you've got a real clear understanding of the gospel, there's plenty of people that don't, and you need to get out there and share it with other people. And James had every reason to think of himself as somebody who has a lot of strengths, gifted communicator, preaching in two languages, growing church. He grew the church, COVID almost killed it. Now he's grown it back up again. And he started multiple house churches, has multiple pastors reporting to him. And he is making a trip for 3 weeks to come and learn and be poured into.
Mm-hmm.
What should that tell us? Whether it's somebody on guest services, whether it's me and you, whether it's a connect group leader. That's one of the things I respect most about Brandon. Brandon consistently asks us questions and our opinions mm-hmm. and is consistent. He's one of the more eager readers that I know because he's consistently hungry to learn. And mm-hmm. when he learns something, he shares it in a way that's like, man, you're really fired up about this, huh?
Yeah.
You know? And so that's not a small point. I guess what I'm getting at is Morgan's point about being hungry to learn can impact global lostness. Mm-hmm. That's not a small thing.
Yeah.
All right. So my last point, and it goes really hand in glove with what Morgan said. It's this, it's investing in leaders is a 10x return. Investing in leaders and pouring into future leaders has an exponential return on investment. The reality about leadership development, the reality about somebody like James is true of every church planner I've ever met. This is the thing that my mentor and people before me have invested into me and helped me to understand. It's that people that are faithful, intentional, and teachable, those are hungry people. Mm-hmm. And when you pour something into their life, it grows exponentially. And they'll go and they'll be doers of the word and not hearers only. Mm-hmm. That's what James says about brothers. Don't be doers of the word, or don't be hearers of the word. I'm butchering this right now.
Don't do it.
be doers of the word and not hearers only. And so what? Deceive yourself. Mm. To be hearers of the word and not doers as well is to live a deceived Christian life. So what I would say for us is, and a combination of a lot of the points that we're making, what, you know, really hearkening back to Morgan's, which is that if we will stay in a posture of hunger and a posture of humility to continue to learn, that puts us in a place to be considered a leader, to be doers of the word, not hearers only. And in this, when what I realize is that investing in a leader has an exponential return on investment. Mm-hmm. What I believe is that these 3 weeks of an investment that we made, and it was a huge team effort, right? There was a lot of stuff that got put on, there was stuff put on your plate. Mm-hmm. There's way more stuff put on my plate. Mm-hmm. There's way more stuff put on our volunteers' plate, like the Hoorays, like Harold and Terry Wisner, like Guy Doty, like lots of people that took him out to lunch and different things and made that investment. There will be a return on that investment that we can see and clearly observe, where the thing that I tell our Connect Group leaders all the time is a good co-leader is going to be somebody who's faithful, intentional, teachable, a good candidate to be discipled in your Connect Group, somebody to invite into a triad, someone who is faithful, intentional, and teachable. Mm-hmm. You want to have your eyes open for people that are hungry in your circles of influence. And those are people that when you pour into them, there is exponential return. That's the hard reality in a church like ours, is that not everybody is a good candidate for a specific discipleship relationship. I want to make sure I'm clear about this. Everybody is a good candidate to be discipled. Whether they're lost, they need to be discipled into following Jesus. Whether they're new in their faith, they need to be discipled into introductory following of Jesus. But I'm talking about deeper, meaningful discipleship. That has no age on it. Mm. That can be a 17-minute-old Christian, that can be a 17-year-old Christian, that can be a 75-year-old Christian. Pete Scazzaro says all the time that there's a difference in being a 1-year-old Christian or a 1-year-old Christian 75 straight years. Hmm. And what you're looking for is somebody who is faithful, intentional, and teachable. And when you invest in that person, it has an exponential return on investment. And I'm curious to see what that is over the next several months with James and what all God does through His Touch Ministries. And if you want to see His stuff, if you want to be a part of His ministry and just observe what they're doing from afar, you can find them on Facebook. It's His Touch Ministries that you can look that up. Or if you need me to pass along his email to you, he's a social media guy. So you can find him on Facebook or Instagram. Or I can send you his email. But we love the time with James. We were so thankful that he was here. And these are all the ways just that our church was blessed by having a chance to just hear his story and be a part of his life in a small way. So anything else that you got?
The only other thing I was thinking of is while you were talking is that if all of this sounds good to us, you know, when we say, hey, we want to find faithful, intentional, teachable people, and we want to make time for leadership development, and, you know, I want to be grateful for what I have and all these different things, I'm just so busy, then I would just say that, you know, we make time for what's important to us, you know, and if all this is important to us, then we can make some time for it.
Ooh.
You know, and I know that it's hard to think of how am I going to make time, but you know, I doubt that you felt, Jordan, like, oh, I have all this time to give 3 weeks to this pastor, you know?
Yeah, all my other job responsibilities didn't stop.
Yeah, exactly. Sundays kept happening, you know, connect groups kept happening. All these different things kept happening. James was just here in the middle of it. And we just make time. You mm-hmm. know, if we care about leadership development, let's find someone and let's make time to develop them. That's all I was thinking.
And I think the person that's faithful, intentional, and teachable will hear an exhortation like that, and they'll mm-hmm. say, man, what a good point.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I there's something for me in there. Without feeling guilt or shame or condemnation, it's the person that is struggling with some aspect of that, being especially being teachable, that hears an exhortation like that and feels attacked by it. So please mm-hmm. don't hear Morgan's exhortation as an attack. She is the least aggressive person I think that I've ever met. She's not passive aggressive. She's passive passive. And I'm just kidding. She is a gentle and tactful person. And so I hope you hear that's probably the most very precise, insightful sort of direct thing I think I've ever heard her say. But that is true, man. Like, you make time for what's important to you. And I hope that you'll make time, because it's not about us. It's not about, like, God will clearly send faithful, intentional, and teachable people from around the world mm-hmm. to be a part of what God's doing here. And so it's not about us. This is about everybody that's a family here at Connection Church, of their spiritual journey. And we don't want you to miss out on anything that God has for you in our body. And we just want to play our part in observing what God is doing, observing what we believe God can do, encouraging people towards making heaven full. So mm-hmm. cool. Morgan, thanks for the time today. To all of our Connect Group leaders and everybody that serves so faithfully, thank you for all that you do. We'll be back with you next week for another episode. Until then, we'll talk to you soon.